Stephen Connor, Paraphernalia, The Curious Lives of Magical Things, Profile Books, 2013. Being themselves so easily transferable from place to place and from office to office, pins seem to have the magical power of taking on and transmitting the qualities of other things. There is a tradition that a wart can be cured by touching it with a pin and dropping the pin into a bottle, which is then buried. As the pin rusts, so the wart will shrink. In another version, pins are driven into the warts, then stuck into the bark of an ash tree. Oh, and be careful never to take into your mouth a pin that has been used in a shroud, for it will rot your teeth. The pin has a good claim to being thought of as the most transformable of objects, making it a kind of stem thing that is capable of being turned into almost any other thing. Of no object is this more true than the paperclip, which is in essence a bent pin. According to Howard Suffren, the heir to the Pittsburgh-based paperclip firm, 3 out of every 10 paperclips were lost, and only 1 in 10 was ever used to hold papers together. Other uses include toothpicks, fingernail and ear cleaners, makeshift fasteners for nylons, bras and blouses, tie clasps, chips in card games, markers in children's games, decorative chains and weapons. No object, not even the elastic band, is more allied to active contemplation than the paperclip. Because pins join things together temporarily, they are themselves mobile and transactive objects, which move between their different contexts, like so many of those on which I meditate in this book. Pins of various kinds form connections and passages in machines and constructions. To twirl at the pin is to apply oneself to the door handle. Pins are therefore, like coins and other objects that undergo rapid passage, ideal narrative objects. In fact, they are something like an image or engine of narrative itself. The narrator of The History of a Pin hands over the narrative to her subject with the words, "We shall leave her to tell it in her own way, and in the first person singular, indicative mood, past tense, as every decently grammatical individual, whether pin or person, ought to do." Here the pin is slyly affiliated to the I itself, both the fullest expression of subjective experience, and yet also the most elementary, almost accidental stroke of the pen. The story of the pin pins together the great realm of the indiscriminate, two pins being as alike as anything can be, except possibly two peas, and the hic et nunc particularity of an individual point of view. And yet, as The History of a Pin reminds us, pins are always ladies. It has been suggested that some ingenious philosopher could write a full tractate on women in her relation to pins. Hairpins, clothespins, hatpins, rolling pins. In such stories, the pin, like the coin, really has no story of her own. She is at the centre by being always on the fringe of things. She is merely an onlooker, an overhearer, a fellow traveller, a facilitator, a connector, a compiler, a switchboard operator. She is a linchpin.